hello, six pack of confidence. Been so many nights since we first met. Glad to see you brought all your friends for another night of Plastic Cup Politics.
Oh, hi, how's it going? Welcome to a new episode of Plastic Cup Politics Podcast. I'm your host, Mark LaRue. That guy over there, that is Dr. Sean Hayes. It's a PhD, by the way, in case you guys were wondering. This is Plastic Cup Politics Podcast, your premier drinking and politics podcast based in Arizona. Yeah, that's what I'm sticking to. If you want to interact with the show, you can do so at Plastic Cup Pod. We're going to make a little short one. We just want to tell you, we don't want to tell you how to vote. Maybe Sean wants to tell you how to vote. We want to make sure that you do vote. We would like to let you know how we see things on how you should vote. Might be the nice way of putting that. And that's what we're going to look at on this fine episode of Plastic Cup Politics Podcast. Right now, I will say, Dr. Sean Hayes, PhD, how you doing? What are you having?
I don't know if you know this, but I happen to be friends with a guy who's a brewer. And he stopped by my house last night to eat some Chinese food and play board games, and left behind a couple of really awesome beers. One of which, I have two of them for tonight's show. One is Standard Behavior, by Barrier Brewing Company, established in the year 2009. So it looks like the hops in this are Citra, Amarillo, and Simcoe.
Mm-hmm.
That's tasty. It's actually not as citrusy as I would have liked, but it's also not super bitter or gross the way a lot of IPAs are. So that's a yummy beer right there. I like it.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember that one. I have had that one myself. Double IPA, I believe. And I think it's a little hazy, but not too crazy. Not too crazy like what I'm drinking. I happen to have another one of these Drekker Chonks that I was drinking with your lovely wife last night.
That stuff is goddamn delicious.
Yeah, Sunday Sour, raspberry and white chocolate. It is thick. It is, no, when they call it a Sunday, it is chonka thick.
So seriously, there are some of our listeners who heard you say raspberry and white chocolate and went, what the fuck? It's good. Did any, maybe, I don't know. Maybe none of you were as trashy as I was when I was a younger man. But if you remember, St. Ides made like fruity malt liquor for a while. And the flavor in this is much, much better. But it's a similar experience, right, in terms of a beer, but with a sort of sweet-ish flavor profile with fruit and like candy flavors in it, that kind of thing.
And it is thick.
Yeah. It's a, you know, they used to make the joke that like you're drinking a meal when you drink a Guinness. No, you're drinking a meal when you drink that thing.
You're drinking your dessert.
Yeah. I think I said last night it looked like somebody had put red velvet cake in a blender.
Yes, I believe that is exactly what you said. It's delicious. If you see it, most of their stuff is kind of like that. Super, super chunky, giant fruit bomb beers. They're all yuck. Let's just go ahead and jump right into the ballot.
Yay.
I'm going to go ahead and put an assumption that you're going to say straight ticket.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about why, right? It's not just because I'm a liberal, right? I think Republicans should be doing the same thing this time around if they are Trump supporters, I guess. Other Republicans who have a conscience and a modicum of intelligence, they could probably split the ticket, vote third party or write in, or if they really have a conscience, vote for Biden, and then vote Republican the rest of the way down. Personally, I think we've reached the point here in the U.S., and I think a lot of moderate Republicans actually feel the same way. It's part of why Trump's polling numbers and the polling numbers for Senate candidates around the country, GOP Senate candidates around the country are tanking, is that, you know, there are a lot of moderate Republicans who are actually looking at voting for Democratic candidates this time around, because the GOP has, let's face it, they sold this country out and everyone knows it now. And that's not metaphoric. It's not they didn't sell it out metaphorically. They sold it out
wholesale?
Wholesale, in reality, right? They sold it out to, and they the sad part is they didn't even really sell it to the highest bidder. I mean, they rolled over and took it from like the lowest bidding John around. It's really pathetic. Like who'd they sell it to? They sold it to a bunch of religious fanatics, right? They sold it to an orange tinted windbag who hasn't actually been rich in decades, right? And they sold it to the brutal dictator who runs our primary rival, who is never going to give them any of the benefits they're hoping he will. So like they sold not only the country, but their souls for a fucking pittance. Right. So if you have a conscience and a brain, you're looking at probably voting for the other party this time, or maybe, you know, staying home, whatever. So, yeah, I'm going to review the ballot from the perspective of voting a straight blue ticket. For those of you who are outside of the Phoenix, the city of Phoenix, but still in the metro area, there are going to be people on your ballot that we won't cover here tonight. And there will be people on our ballot that you won't see on yours. That's just the way it is. I can't go and research every candidate from every district in Arizona. It's just not going to happen.
I would cover mine, but I already sent mine in yesterday. So,
well, and so here's the thing: the Democrats did this awesome thing, and I don't know if they did it in every neighborhood, but they certainly did it. Oh no, this was paid for by LD24 Democrats. So this may be just specific to my neighborhood, but damn, they should have done it everywhere. Somebody came by and put a door hanger on my door, and that door hanger just – it lists out the entire blue ticket, everyone you need to vote for to vote straight blue, including the ballot propositions. The down ballot stuff, like judges, we'll get to in a minute. They gave you some selections there as well, but not all of them. But we'll come back to that. So at the top of the ballot, obviously you're voting Biden-Harris unless you hate America. And I'm not joking about that. I mean it. It's serious. Anyone who is still a diehard Trump supporter at this point, it's clear that you hate this country and you want it to die and turn it into something else. Some amalgam of like white supremacist utopia and third world wasteland. The rest of us aren't interested in joining you in that nightmare. So go fuck yourselves. For everyone else, you're voting Biden-Harris at the top of the ticket. Next, for U.S. Senate. And again, this one's really a no-brainer. Even if she wasn't a Trump supporter, right? Even if she hadn't voted repeatedly to kill various provisions of the ACA and take away protections for people who currently have health insurance in the middle of a pandemic, she's still just an awful person. And you can tell based on the attack ads she's produced. Like Mark Kelly and even most of the PACs supporting Mark Kelly never went low on her. And nevertheless, she and her supporters have just been telling lie after lie after lie. And we're not talking about just a Senate candidate here, right? Like Mark Kelly flew 29 combat missions in Iraq. He's a Navy combat veteran and a fucking astronaut. Four missions, right, in space. The dude's an extraordinary human being. He's married to Kathy Gifford, who was a representative here in Arizona who was shot in the head by a right-wing fanatic. Gabby Gifford, sorry. Kathy Gifford. Good grief. That was the one.
Your friends can see you now.
That was the crazy one that was on the show with Regis Philbin, right?
Yeah. R.I.P.
Gabby Giffords, I sincerely apologize. So anyway, he took time away from his career with NASA to stay home and help his wife learn how to walk again and how to eat again and how to speak again. Because again, I can't stress this enough, she was shot in the fucking head by a right-wing fanatic. It's an important piece of information in this election. So clearly you're voting for Mark Kelly. Next, we have two House of Representative candidates on our ballot. Or rather on this hanger, because LD24 is, or rather the people who paid for this knew they were going to hang it in areas that weren't all going to go to the same representative, blah, blah, blah. You get it.
Anyway. Right. I would actually like to talk about that. So when you said that, everybody should vote straight ticket, you said either side of the aisle, you should vote straight ticket. So what do you do if with Schweigert, who has 11 ethics violations and has been like, he's clearly a bad guy. I mean,
what party is he with?
He's a Republican.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if, you know, it's not always one-sided. Are you saying that even if there's somebody on the, there isn't that I know of, on the Democratic side of the ticket that has major violations or anything like that, but if it was, would you still hold firm that you should vote for that person?
It depends on the circumstances. So under the current circumstances, yes, absolutely. Well, so first of all, let me say I qualified my initial statement, right? If you are a diehard Trump supporter, then you should vote a straight red ticket. If you are anyone else, you should be looking at either staying home or voting blue. And it doesn't matter how much you like your local representative from the GOP. You have to admit that the GOP has done so much damage to this country that they have to be held accountable. And the only way that's going to happen is if they lose not just the presidency in a landslide, but they have to lose all over the country in a massive landslide in order to drive home to them that this kind of demagoguery, this populism, this racism, the, you know, the whole like backhanded embrace of white supremacy, the fucking all of it, it all has to go, or they will never again hold majority power in the United States. That's a message that has to be delivered. And the only way that that's going to happen is if we vote them out. So under the current circumstances, let's say the Schweikert was a Democrat. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness he's not, but let's say that he was. I would still advise you to vote for Schweikert. I'd advise you to hold your nose and vote straight blue, even though he's a corrupt piece of shit, because the other party represents an existential threat to our country right now, the GOP. And that sort of that's more important than holding one corrupt douchebag accountable.
And that is a part of Plastic Up Politics where we disagree. And that's fine.
Cause yeah.
Yeah. I still need some kind of resemblance of strength of character, but I also see the need for the greater good. But hopefully, luckily this isn't quite as corrupt as Chicago out here.
Well, so here's the other thing that I think is important, to throw out there. And this is, I have seen a lot of Bernie bros and other folks getting this message, like it's finally dawning on them over the course of the last couple of weeks. The country, our republic, is not going to survive long enough for you to get to sort of that more ethical and higher moral ground if we don't punish the GOP this election cycle. Right. I know you want to get back to a place where, like, you know, you can consistently vote your conscience and it will work out well. I want to get back to that place as well. And by the way, I mean, we're really only talking about hypothetically holding our nose. Right now, there's no one on the blue ticket that has that kind of stench attached to
them.
Correct. But I think that part of, I mean, we've talked about it on this show before, like this is part of the great trick the devil played on the American people with this whole bullshit about how, you know, we should have primaries and you should be voting for individuals, not party, and you should evaluate them based on their performance, not what party they're aligned with or not their ideology. It's all fucking nonsense. It's bullshit. No one has the time to do that for a ticket like this, right? Like, I have a little bit of a cheat sheet here because somebody hung it on my door, but that only happened after I filled out my own ballot. And I have a fucking PhD in political science, Mark. It took me 4 hours to fill out my ballot because I had to look up every goddamn candidate and sometimes multiple searches on different using different search syntax just to try and dig down into the information I needed to determine who these people were so that I could actually vote for them or against them in those nonpartisan races, right? In the races where they had a party affiliation after them, it was easy, right? The GOP is an existential threat to America right now. you vote for the Democrat every time. Doesn't matter what the race is. You get down to those nonpartisan races, suddenly you have to dig through the goddamn weeds to find out who the right-wing nut job is. And that's why they set up nonpartisan races that way. It's a scam. It's a scam that benefits the party that has held long-term power. In this case, in Arizona, it's the Republicans. There are other states where they also do nonpartisan elections, and they serve to benefit the Democrats because the Democrats are the ones who have held long-term power in that state. It's a scam. The whole idea of voting on the basis of individual behavior is a scam, unless that behavior is terrifyingly egregious and we are in a normal election cycle, right? You need to have both of those qualifiers in place. And then fine, yeah, especially when they make it obvious, a person like Schweikert or there was a Democrat and a Republican who ended up getting smacked for all sorts of weird violations in the 2016 cycle. The Democrat was a woman. She got caught having an affair with one of her staffers, or maybe it was her chief of staff. And she ended up having to resign. And then the other guy, he and his wife spent like $300,000 of campaign money buying themselves SUVs and fancy vacations and shit. Again, both of those people made it so unbelievably obvious that no research was required. You knew they were a corrupt asshole. And so you either vote for the other guy or you vote for third party, basically throw your vote away. But either way, that's how you're punishing that candidate of your own party, is by not giving them your vote. But we have to be talking about a normal election cycle where we're not facing the potential death of the Republic. And we have to be talking about behavior that's so egregious it doesn't require the average Joe, many of whom are working two, possibly three jobs, to sit down for 3 or 4 hours after they've already done their job and taken care of their family to research all of these candidates and fill out a ballot. It's a scam. The whole thing is a scam. Sorry, I went a little bit longer with that than I intended. So the House of Representatives for District 7, you're voting Ruben Gallego. And then in District 9, it's Greg Stanton. And both of them are solid choices, right? Like, they are fairly middle-of-the-road, solid Democratic representatives. You're not making some dashing statement, in favor of progressivism by voting for them. But, you're not also holding your nose and voting for a blue dog conservative Democrat. It's just they're solid middle of the road Democrats. Good for them. For the state House races, there's no governor's race this time around. So
good news for Doug Ducey on that.
Yeah, no shit. Or he would be on his way out.
Yep.
AZ Senate District 24, Layla Alston. She actually lives near us. She's a very sweet person, and I absolutely would love to see her be victorious. So that was AZ Senate District 24. AZ House District 24, you can vote for two, and in this case it would be Jennifer Longden and Amish Shaw, who seems like a genuinely nice individual, but for some reason my deaf puppy hates his face and tries to savage his lawn signs every time we find one when we walk through our neighborhood in the morning. Amish, I am sorry about the tooth marks on some of your signs. AZ Corporation Commission, vote for three. In this election, you want to vote for Anna Tovar, Bill Mundell, and Shea Stanfield. That's your blue ticket for AZ Corporation Commission, which is so like school district boards. The Corporation Commission is often a stepping stone. It's where people start their political careers. It's also a really important position for local and municipal politics, or for state and municipal politics. So it's not to be overlooked. Now we get to the part where there's a lot of confusion. But this year, it was easy for us. The people who wrote the ballot propositions this year were by and large progressives in Arizona, and that should tell you something about what's going to happen on November 3rd. Prop 207, the Smart and Safe AZ Act. I just praised the people who wrote these initiatives. Let me also Now damn them as well. Fuck you for picking a mealy-mouthed name like that. Proposition 207 is to legalize marijuana in the state of Arizona. Not only would it legalize it, it would tax it at 16%. It does not direct where those tax revenues are to be spent. I know that there are people out there pissing and moaning about that. Just ask yourself how well the ranching fees for state parkland in northern Arizona, so which is a part of the Arizona State Constitution, are supposed to go directly to education. Ask yourself if any dollar, a dime of that money has ever gone to education in the state of Arizona. If you do the research, you'll find out the answer is no. So those laws directing how money must be spent, there's plenty of ways to get around those, and it's just pointless. It taxes it at 16%. It'll generate a ton of revenue, tax revenue at the state level. And it also has provisions that mandate that people who have been convicted of nonviolent drug crimes related to marijuana, that their records be expunged, and that if they are currently incarcerated, they be released. Now, obviously, there are caveats there. If you're in, even if you went to the Pinta for something that was nonviolent, if you've been violent while you're there, then you're not going to get released. But if you have a good record while you're in prison and you went to prison for a nonviolent crime related to marijuana, Prop 207 could very well get you out of prison. If you're a family member of someone who's been locked in a cage because they bought marijuana or had marijuana on them, this is the ballot proposition for you. Or if you're just a decent human being who thinks that it is a crime against humanity that we take someone who, for having a few ounces of weed in their pocket, we stick them in a cage alongside murderers and rapists for decades. You just chew on that when you're thinking about whether you should vote yes on Prop 207. So the answer is vote yes on Prop 207. Next one, 208, Invest in Education Act. That one, they picked an appropriate name. It is exactly what it says it is. It is to generate additional revenue at the state level by levying a new tax, I think, on sales and bed tax, maybe for hotels, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it's not a new income tax, but it is a new tax at like 3%, I think.
It is a tax at, I think, 3.5% on income over $250,000. $500,000 if filing jointly.
Yeah. All right. So even better, right? We're talking about a 3% annual tax on people who can afford it. And that tax will generate additional funds that are that will be driven right back into the classroom, right? It spells out right there in the ballot proposition that it's not to be spent on more administrators, more principals making $150,000 a year while their teachers have to fucking apply for food stamps. No, it's going back into teacher salaries, making those more competitive, and then supplies for the actual classroom so that, hey, maybe next year our teachers won't have to send home lists begging parents to send in the classroom supplies that the school should have been able to buy if they had an actual budget. So vote yes on Prop 208.
So, about Prop 208.
Shoot.
So the whole taxing somebody making over $250,000 a year, that's a good amount of money. But, you know, if you're making between $250,000 and $500,000 a year, your taxes are going to go up maybe $600. The real thing is that apparently from talking with my roommates, there are, I believe, 968 Arizonans that make over $5 million a year. Mm-hmm. Those under 1,000 Arizona residents, their taxes would go up about $333,000 a year.
Good.
If you're wondering where the money is coming from and where everybody who is saying that this is a bad idea and they shouldn't have to pay this tax and it's the largest tax hike in Arizona history and all these things, if you're wondering who is being affected by that and who is running those ads and who is behind that, it might be less than 1,000 Arizonans that are going to be affected by this.
And on the other side, you remember, if you want to know who's in favor of it and who wrote the ballot proposition and who's been driving the campaign, it's all those lovely people that you saw in red shirts out on the streets a few years ago, walking out of classrooms to protest the abysmal pay, the horrifyingly long hours for abysmal pay. The lack of any sort of modern classroom equipment or textbooks, the massive class sizes, right? For those of you who don't know, the districts here in Arizona can play a trick, an accounting trick. They designate just about everyone as teaching staff, right? And then when it comes time to calculate the number of students per, right? They say per class, but what they really mean is per instructor. It drives their numbers down. But really what you have are, you know, even at the best schools in the richest neighborhoods, like where Jen teaches, right? Most of the teachers there have about 25 kids per class. Some of them, like Jen, unfortunately, you know, it can go up to 40, 45 kids per class. It continues to be a travesty the way we treat our teachers in Arizona. And what's even worse, and what most people don't seem to understand, is as we treat our teachers badly, we treat our kids badly. Because that's where we're sending our kids for 8 hours a day. Anyway. So, yeah, vote yes on Prop 208, or you're a horrible person. And I mean that.
I would also like to just – I don't know if we've jettisoned into this one before. Also, just the signs about how 207 does not fund – K through 12. In case you were wondering who's also not behind the weed one, yeah, same people trying to confuse you. Anyway.
Yeah. Prop 449 and Prop 444. One is a health fund, basically. This one actually is a sales tax that goes into a fund for county health services here in Maricopa County, and the other is continues to allow the city of Phoenix to set its own budget. Vote yes on both of those. It's a no-brainer on both. So really quickly for Maricopa County, which a lot of our listeners are in Maricopa County, so these people are going to be on your ballot. For sheriff, again, it's a no-brainer. You vote Paul Penzone. If you've seen any of Jerry Sheridan's signs, which start with something about, you know, fight the mob, blah, blah, blah. And he doesn't mean organized crime. He means all of those black and brown people who are insisting on not being murdered by police officers. That's who he's talking about fighting. Paul Penzone, on the other hand, has been our sheriff for a few years now, has done a good job, has reversed a lot of the disgusting things that Sheriff Joke did while preserving, you know, some of the parts of that system that were working well. So good on him. County attorney, it's Julie Gunnigle, G-U-N-N-I-G-L-E. This one is another one that's super important. Our current county attorney is a real piece of shit, so let's get rid of her. Or him, whatever. County recorder, Adrian Fontes. Again, that's actually a sleeper election. It's an important one, so please vote for Adrian. County assessor, again, that's also actually an important one that most people don't think of. Aaron Connor, in this case, is who you're voting for. County treasurer, Dan Toporek. County superintendent of education, let's go ahead and vote for Jean Castine. She even has the honor of having names that rhyme. Good for her. Works really well on signs and placards. County Board of Supervisors, District 3, Whitney Walker. And County Board of Supervisors, District 5, Steve Gallardo. City of Phoenix Mayor, go ahead and vote for the incumbent, Kate Gallego. If you, for some reason, have a problem with Kate, she, in my opinion, has done a good job. But if you have a problem with her, Tim Cay is, or C, it's S-E-A-Y. is a good alternative. Marissa Hamilton, I think her name is a straight up like self-declared libertarian only because like, anyway, you know, Trump supporter, right-wing psychopath. So no on Marissa Hamilton. So vote for Kate Gallego. If you don't like Kate, vote for Tim CA. Now we get down to the Supreme Court. In Arizona, this is what I was talking about with nonpartisan elections. Here's the way our system in Arizona works. Four judges at the Supreme Court, Court of Appeals, and Superior Court level. When an opening comes up, either via retirement or after an election, and we'll get to that here in a minute, a nonpartisan, and I'm doing irony quotes around that right now, commission puts together a list of several candidates per opening, sends those over to the governor, and the governor selects the candidate that he insists is best qualified. And at the Court of Appeals level, occasionally, and at the Superior Court level, quite frequently, actually, governors have picked across party lines to select judges to put into those roles. At the Supreme Court level, right, which is the court that really matters most in Arizona, it's happened one time, and that was Republican Governor Jane Hull. She chose a Democrat for an open seat on the Supreme Court. Otherwise, Republicans always pick Republicans and Democrats always pick Democrats, but still they pretend it's a nonpartisan election. So they select the candidate to go into that judgeship. That candidate then serves as a judge for several years, and then they come up for election. And in Arizona, the election is only yes or no. Right? There's no opposing candidate running for that seat. You're just voting as to whether or not you want to keep that judge on the bench. A yes, if they get a majority of yes votes, they stay. If they get a majority of no votes, they have to go after the election, and then the governor will nominate a replacement. And a few years later, you'll vote on whether or not you want to keep that replacement. Here's the trick, right? The governor is absolutely using a partisan litmus test to choose candidates, especially for the Supreme Court. But then a few years later, they want to pretend that those candidates weren't selected based on their ideological qualifications, right? There's two exceptional ways to predict how someone will behave either on the bench or once they're in office. The first is their party affiliation. Who have they voted for in the last several election cycles? Right. And the other is, you know, markers of their ideological predisposition. Are they conservative or liberal? That is going to give you a really good indication of how that person will behave on the bench. Or it gives you a really good shorthand to evaluate how they have behaved on the bench in the past, even though, like, I don't know about you. Do you know where to go to get a judge's record?
I do not. Yeah. I ask people like Dr. Sean Hayes, PhD. Hey, man, how do you vote on judges?
So here's how we're going to vote. On the Supreme Court, you're going to vote no on Andrew W. Gould and John Lopez IV. For the other judges, you can vote however you want. For me, I vote no on all the fuckers because I think the entire system is a scam. And the way that I think it should work is we should keep the nonpartisan commission and the governor selection, blah, blah, blah. That part's fine. But once we get around to these elections, even if we still do the yes, no thing, I'm also fine with that. But these fuckers should have to have a D or an R or an I after their name. And we should have access to sort of the ideological markers of their voting record so that people can make an informed choice about whether they want to keep this judge or not. So Supreme Court, Andrew W. Gould, John Lopez IV, fuck you guys, vote no. Court of Appeals Division I, James Morse, Jennifer Perkins, and David Weinzvig. Weinzvig, I think is how that pronounced. Vote no on all three of those assholes. Fuck them. Superior Court, Christopher Curry and Jolynn Gentry. You can both eat ass. Vote no on both of them. Get them out of there. On the rest of them, you can vote yes or no at your leisure. It doesn't really matter. So that's how I would vote on judges, and that's also why I would vote that way on judges.
If you want to know how I see it in Yavapai County, I voted blue. I voted yes, all the propositions and stuff. I voted no on all the judges because I asked Dr. Sean Hayes, PhD, how to do that.
Yep. It's, you know, I mean, for me, that is kind of my own personal protest vote. I know that at some point over the course of the last couple of decades, I probably have cast votes against judges that I would have supported had I had any information about who they were or how they vote or how they ruled on the bench. But I didn't have any of that information, and that's a system that's very obviously designed to deceive me, the voter, so fuck them. I voted no on all of them.
There you go. And please get those ballots in as quickly as you can. That's the right thing to do. Get them in. I mailed mine off, and so hopefully it's going to get tallied, and then we can talk about the Boogaloo flu, because something that Dr. Sean Hayes wanted to talk about the... Yeah, all that stuff that Antifa's been doing. Evidently hasn't been Antifa. Weird.
So I swear I will keep this fucking short. The point of what I want to talk about is that this is probably the best evidence of structural racism I've seen in a while. So the Boogaloo Boys, spelled B-O-I. Fucking morons. For those of you who aren't aware, are a bunch of right-wing nutbags who are also amosexuals. They are in love with their guns, and they want to start a revolution, a war. For many of them, it's a race war, right? And so they've been plotting online, usually in the dark and gross corners of the internet, occasionally on Facebook, which is – actually, I don't know why I distinguish. That's probably the grossest corner of the internet right there at this point is Facebook. But they also get together on like 4chan and shit like that. And they sort of masturbate together online talking about how they're going to shoot all those brown people or how they're going to shoot all those liberals or how they're going to shoot everyone to start their little apocalyptic war.
How they're going to kidnap the governor of Minnesota.
I don't know whether those were Boogaloo Boys. It was the governor of Michigan.
Oh, sorry.
Gretchen Whitmer. And Michigan just has a long history of really shitty militias. I don't know why. I think I saw an article a couple weeks ago that tried to explain why Michigan was always a breeding ground for militias. Somebody, feel free to Google it and look it up if you're interested. Personally, I don't give a shit. I just think they all need to be sort of expelled from the country. So anyway, the Boogaloo Boys are a right-wing paramilitary group. And if you'll all recall, at the height of sort of the protests after George Floyd was killed, after George Floyd was murdered, there were some police precincts that were attacked and burned down. One of them was in Minnesota, Minneapolis. Yep. There was a federal protective service guard post in California that was shot up, and two federal protection agents were killed. And then there was a bunch of other stuff that happened, and everyone sort of scratched their heads and went, man, this really looks like there's evidence that this is actually right-wing provocateurs doing this, not the Black Lives Matters protesters. Well, turns out that was right. It was, in fact, the Boogaloo Boys who attacked the District 3 precinct in Minneapolis, set it on fire, and shot it up with semi-automatic weapons. Afterwards, the ones who did that drove back to Texas, where they actually live. They live outside Austin. A couple days later, they were driving around, and they got pulled over by Austin PD. And they had three long guns in the car on the back seat, so one AK-47 and two ARs. They had a handgun on the seat within reach of any of the occupants of the car. They were all wearing tactical gear with multiple magazines tucked in. One had like a floral pattern on his magazines, you know, because that's a thing with the Boogaloo Boys, Hawaiian shirts, because they think Boogaloo sounds like luau for some reason. And so the cops pulled these people over. Oh, there was also a bag of marijuana in plain sight. And in Texas, that's illegal. I think in Texas you can get medical marijuana maybe, but you definitely can't just run around with it. They had a bag of weed on the in plain sight. So the officers got them all out of the car, searched everything. And in the course of which, one of them admitted to those Austin police officers that he had attacked that police district in Minneapolis and shot the place up with his AR-15 or with his AK-47. Let's make this fucker famous. His name is Harrison Hunter. Yeah, he really does have that douchey a name. And so he shot up that precinct, and the Austin PD confiscated the guns, the ammo, and the weed, and then let them all go. Here's what I want you to ask yourself. For those of you who are still skeptical about the existence of structural racism, now imagine the three occupants of that car were black. How do you think that traffic stop ends? It ends with at least one dead black man. Right? We know this now. We don't have to guess about it. So anyway. So apparently, if you're a white dude, you can run around with a car full of guns and weed, and you can admit to the cops that you have shot up a police station, and they're still going to let you go. Now, subsequently, Hunter S. Hoopty Fru, or whatever the fuck his name is, Harrison Hunter or Hunter Harrison, some stupid ass white kid name, has been arrested on federal charges. He crossed state lines to participate in a riot, and they also tacked on some additional charges there. They've since produced text message exchanges of him talking to the guy who murdered those federal protective service agents in California. They were chatting with each other on the night that happened. And encouraging one another. So the whole thing is super gross. And it is a prime example of the fact that if you're white, you can get away with shit that no one else can. That would get you extrajudicially murdered by the police if you were any color other than white. So for those of you who don't believe structural racism exists, I beg you, please go look up the articles out there from reputable sources that are reporting on this having happened. Read the details for yourself and then ask yourself again if structural racism isn't a problem in this country. Boom, I told you I'd make it short, and it's short.
Yeah, that's a pretty short podcast. I think that's I think that's all we came to say.
Hell yeah, it is. Oh, by the way, I switched to another beer. I want to make sure I don't leave them out because I had one of these last night and it's fucking super good. It's by Four Silos. It's Arizona Agave is the beer name. It's got mesquite smoked agave in it, and it's a porter. It's 7.7 ABV, 20 IBU, I guess, so it's not super bitter. It is goddamn delicious. Thank you, Four Silos. That was some yummy-ass beer.
Yeah, so Four Silos over in Gilbert, also known as their Arizona Porter.
It's yummy.
Yeah. I canned that one myself.
Hey, look at you.
Yeah. You can interact with the show at Plastic Cup Pod on your favorite social media platforms. And however you're listening to this, hit that subscribe button, and that would do us all well. And we will talk at you again when we talk at you again.
Stay safe, everyone. Whoa!